Hey guys, quick heads up before we get to the show here. Had a little bit of an equipment problem. You're going to hear it right away. There's a low hum that was the result of some sort of issue with the mic. Anyway, I have gotten it fixed, so you won't hear it again, but this show has it, and you will notice it. And I apologize in advance for that. I still think the show is quite listenable, but just so you know, it's there, and I'm sorry. Anyway. Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. It's time once again for our biannual Funimation podcast. As always, joining us, very happy to have these guys on, Senior Marketing Manager Adam Sheehan. Adam, thanks for coming on.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on as always.
And the, I would say the face of Funimation's marketing, Justin Rojas. He's the Senior Manager of Social Strategy and Development. Say that three times fast, Justin. Thanks for coming on the
Hello.
Show.
It's more of the hair of Funimation.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You're in Las Vegas right now for Otakon Vegas, right?
I am. I just landed, got to my hotel, and getting ready to do a whole lot of gambling and lose all my money. Not really. I'm not really going to do that.
Yeah, that sort of loses its glamour after the first couple $100.
So many, there's just enough slots. Just keep changing what they look like with the same game.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So we got a lot of questions for you. A lot of it's been a little while since we've had you on, and it's been an eventful last, I would say, 6-7 months. So let's just get right to it. I'm just going to start out at the top with the usual question we start with, which is, how is it going?
Things have been going really well for us. I mean, 2014 was a banner year for us, and we'll go through, again, multiple different reasons why. I know, basically, what do you call it? It's been a lot of we had a lot of good products released. We had a lot of big updates and a lot of good changes. Talking about some of our bigger releases, I know Justin will back us up. Basically, the our biggest release for the year, it was no surprise to anyone, was Dragon Ball Z Battle of Gods.
Yeah, it's been a super busy year. A lot of that is definitely due to the fact of having new Dragon Ball Z content for us, and we haven't done that in such a long time. And with the red carpet premieres we did, with the theatrical event, with the home video release, it's been a lot. It's been a huge year for Dragon Ball, but I mean, that's not the only thing. I mean, big stuff this year. We released Attack on Titan.
It's kind of a thing.
And that's across the board again. It spanned the entire year from convention events and all the summer stuff and then the releases themselves.
So, yeah, the announcement of Attack on Titan with the cast just rolled out great online. They just did. It felt like almost broke our page. Sometimes so much traffic was hidden. It was wonderful. It didn't actually break our page. I'll say that. But yeah, the releases came out great. The fans really enjoyed them. And it's again, you only get shows like that once, you know, every few years, every decade even. So to have that and a DBZ release in the same, you know, year is like, really? Wow, this is awesome. Leading into, again, also our products we got at the end of the year, which of course everyone's favorite is Cowboy Bebop.
Right. Yeah, that was a little nuts.
yeah, exactly. We were like, wow. I mean, you guys, we knew you loved it, but wow.
Yeah, it's been a good time with Bebop. Actually, that's one of the big reasons I'm here in Vegas this weekend is we're still continuing the Bebop, you know, bandwagon out here. We've got the voice actors, English voice actors here as guests, and we're doing another big Bebop panel. I mean, with the you know, release of it being first time ever in HD on Blu-ray. For the U.S. market, it's been a great time for us.
And hopefully all the fans did pre-order it, the special editions, because those are quite gone.
Yeah, if you want those, you get to go look at the prices on eBay. And
Which are amazing us. We saw that like, what? Wow.
You could have been charging Aniplex prices for that.
Oh, sorry, EJ.
Oh, we love EJ.
So with that in mind, I assume, so does that mean that Dragon Ball Z Battle of Gods was your best seller for the year?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the other ones did great, but Dragon Ball Z is Dragon Ball Z. It gets a much bigger audience than just the anime audience, or even the anime-influenced audience. You know, basically the anime fans, they watch anime casually, but they are, you know, do other things, where there's Dragon Ball Z fans who might not even watch anime at all, but they watched Dragon Ball Z, and they came out of the woodworks for this release.
Yeah, one of the cool things about Dragon Ball Z was the fact that we did the theatrical run for it as well, and seeing, I mean, physically seeing the fan turnout for these showings. I mean, it was only a limited 4-day event with some, you know, select screenings here and there, but each of those screenings was amazing. We actually, I think, I forget what it was, but our per screening capacity, you know, ticket sales was actually higher than most major Hollywood movies, because it's just such an awesome fan base, and they came from all corners of the, you know, United States to come see this movie.
And using the word event really does stress it wide. This was more of a just go, I'm gonna go see a movie. What are you doing today? Let's go see a film. Let's go see Dragon Ball. It was, let's get all our friends, let's put on some blonde hair, and let's go see this movie and tell everyone about it.
I guess I'm just, I'm a little surprised. Maybe not surprised. Maybe surprised is not the word. It's I guess, a little stunning still that you can put out. That Blu-ray came out towards the end of the year, and you had the biggest hit of the last, I would say, 10 years, Attack on Titan, releasing in the same year that you also put out the biggest hit of the last 20 years, Cowboy Bebop. Dragon Ball Z outsold them both. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, but DBZ's staying power is, well, they call staying power for a reason.
I mean, as people put it, this is the house that Goku built, and he continues to, you know, make his mortgage
payments.
Add on
payments. More houses. He's got a summer home now. He's got an addition. He bought Bulma's a nice little place.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It's just this. I guess that's when you look at it and go, okay, well, those are big hits for anime fans. Dragon Ball Z is a hit just in America. Like,
yes, exactly.
The biggest difference.
It's not an anime title anymore. It's just an entertainment title.
Yeah. And we had some like that across the board too, that not quite the size of Dragon Ball Z, but other ones that reached beyond just the anime world when we released the Bayonetta animated movie and the Street Fighter live action series. Those are also ones where we're, again, beyond just reaching to the anime fan, but did well for us this past year.
Okay. So Bayonetta sold pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think the timing on that one was really good. Luckily, you know, Bayonetta 2 coming out on Wii U was timed very well with our release of the movie, which basically summarized the first game. So it was an easy kind of pairing, and Bayonetta was on top of a lot of people's minds. I mean, it was a flagship title for Nintendo this year. So, I mean, luckily we get to piggyback on a lot of that buzz and press. And the game got really great reviews also. So congrats to our pals at Platinum Games and Nintendo and all those guys, because that helped us, and they had a great game come out.
Yeah, well, you certainly did the marketing legwork, because your ads started popping up in places that I frequent for video game stuff, and I don't normally see your ads there. So it was, you know, it was interesting.
We're slowly taking over, and that doesn't also mean we've ignored any of the the smaller titles, or that those weren't successful, because we definitely had some successes in the smaller or mid-range anime focused directly towards the anime fan ones, like Devil's a Part-Timer, Dead Man Wonderland, the first season of Psycho Pass.
I mean, High School DxD New came out this year at the end of the year too, so it was right around the same time, but still great stuff. I mean, definitely a dedicated fan base on a lot of these types of titles. I mean, Fairy Tail continues to drive sales overall.
Fairy Tail's never stopping. Yeah. Not stopping.
So in terms of like underperformers, stuff that you experimented with, was there anything like that this year that stands out as like, well, we tried it, didn't really work?
There's a few things that underperformed. Again, we would never say failed or bad show. Just some of it just didn't hit the right audience at the right time, or just was up against something else. One that comes to mind is the movie HAL. It was a beautiful movie, and we had a great release for it, I think, if it came out. But it just didn't seem to have the exposure up against simulcast releasing at the same time and other things that we were focusing on that year. Again, it was coming out, I believe, in early summer, which was when we were doing the initial push for Dragon Ball Z, and Titan was still a thing. So
yeah, timing on that one was really wonky in regards to not just the U.S. side, but in comparison to the Japanese release as well. So, I mean, there was a lot of steam that wasn't necessarily built up for most releases. That HAL just kind of didn't have behind it for this year. But yeah, I mean, it had a lot of competition internally at the same time.
Yes, it did. It's a beautiful film. Anyone's, the trailer's up there. Go check out Howl, the movie. It's we have some more available on Funimation.com shop.
And I have a particular affinity for androids and android love stories. So if you're into that thing, definitely check out Howl.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you were fighting a little bit of an uphill battle because I had never really heard of that film. You released it, I assume, because, well, maybe not strictly because, but it's a WIT Studio production, and they did Attack on Titan. And you can sort of put that on the box, I guess. But the minute you bring that film up, the first thing out of anyone's mouth, if you say anything about it on Twitter, is, oh, the ending's stupid. You can't get away. You cannot escape that. It's one of those movies where, like, you hear the one thing about it, and that one thing drives the narrative about that film, and then you can't get an opinion that isn't the ending's stupid. So, I don't know, maybe that, I don't know if word of mouth, you know, has anything to do with your sales, but...
I think it was less word of mouth because we were trying to get the word of mouth. Because, I mean, I heard that from a few people, not everyone that was, you know, indifferent about the ending, let's say that.
Right.
But I know, so we bought it and picked it up because it looked like a beautiful film, and it was a beautiful film. So as much as – maybe some of the negative, word of mouth, if it got even a little further, maybe the people actually go like, is that true? I got to find out, would have helped.
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah, that's at least they're talking about it. And that's hard enough as is to get people to talk about things. I mean, one of the challenges we had with one of our movies, Let Me Out, which is a live-action movie. It's actually a Korean independent film. Mm-hmm. And we released that under our Giant Ape line. But really good movie, especially if you're kind of a film buff, if you've gone to film school or have a particular interest in making movies. Let Me Out was a really good example of that. And it also tied in zombie flicks because it was like a film student making zombie movie, which apparently I didn't go to film school, but I've heard a lot of my friends who've seen this like, oh yeah, everybody just wants to make a freaking zombie movie when they go to film school, especially right now. So, I mean, the content was there and it was relevant. But again, I think just not enough people got to know about it, and being a live action film, you know, it's not exactly the same channels that we use on our anime side, which we have, you know, very significant channels on the anime side, but, you know, didn't hit the audience that we wanted it to. Not to say it won't ever, you never know with these kinds of indie films. So that was kind of one of the ones that was, you know, a bit of an underperformer based on, you know, the situation.
Another one I mentioned basically might surprise a few people, what it calls, it's a good series. There's a big fandom, but it seemed we discovered it is a streaming fandom more than they are purchasing, is A Certain Magical Index and A Certain Scientific Railgun. Didn't do as well this year as we were hoping for. Again, it didn't do badly. Well, let's just say that again. It basically just underperformed what we thought it was based on the streaming. The stream numbers were really high, so we spent high expectations for it. We even added a Blu-ray to Index 2 in response to fan feedback. And it just didn't hit what we thought it was going to do, unfortunately.
Well, that title was pretty significantly delayed kind of over and over again, wasn't it? I mean, I remember both of those titles, Railgun and Index, getting some pretty hefty delays. Like, to the point where you kind of... Those eventually got pushed out past their sort of flavor of the month expiration date. Like when that show was really popular 3 years ago, you know?
I'm sure that was part of the factor with that, but I know we've released some other shows that have had popularity and we brought them back out, or resurrected them, and they basically, they work.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe people were just curious and they just wanted to watch it, not necessarily own it, you know? Who knows?
Well, yeah, that happens.
One's also tricky. I mean, for myself personally, in dealing with this show, it's difficult to explain how they all relate and which ones are in the timeline, because there's a lot of weird, because there's like, you know, time travel-y type of things and instances of people being duplicates and whatnot. And so it's like when someone asks you, hey, which should I watch first? Should I watch Index or Railgun or Index 2 and then Railgun S? And it's really complicated to explain that.
The answer is just buy it all and just watch it all.
Simultaneously.
Exactly. Same thing. Get four TVs and start watching them.
Right. Okay. So, well, that's really interesting. Did you notice anything trend-wise, like in terms of, so this year you really started rolling out limited editions and in bigger numbers than you have in the past. And I'm curious, obviously you saw a huge success with Bebop as a result of that, but what sort of trends did you see in your sales this year for Blu-ray? Because, you know, everybody's talking about how it's all moving to streaming. You get that Sky Is Falling stuff about physical media. But I'm curious, like, what your internal metrics tell you about disc buying habits right now.
Before we jump into that, I want to add one more thing to the last piece.
Oh, sure.
No problem. I want to mention, Missy, that we released Future Diaries this year on DVD, and the DVD didn't do that well, didn't do as well as we expected. But a lot of that was because we were waiting for Blu-ray. I think a lot of fans were like, where's the Blu-ray? We're happy to announce here that we will have a Blu-ray release coming later this year, and we're looking at possibly late summer.
Okay.
That's basically where we're going right now. So basically people can basically, you know, prepare for Future Diaries coming out, because we know there's a love for that too.
So we, you know, go into the trends portion. I mean, we do understand that a lot of our fans, the difference between a lot of streaming and home video product is that quality level of, you know, having it in a physical product and people wanting it on Blu-ray. So you could look at Future Diary as kind of a, you know, example of that. And we're hoping to see, you know, a good increase with it being on a Blu-ray release this year. And, you know, I think people that are in that home video market definitely want to have, you know, these types of things that are going to sit on the shelves for a long time. At this point in time, you know, maybe Future Diary being on DVD just wasn't, you know, the appropriate timing for that for the streaming. And so, you know, who knows what we're going to do with some other stuff in the future.
And yeah, directly to that point also, like, we've seen our limited editions, our standard limited editions, the obviously the rigid box and the DVD that we bring out, those have not seen any drop off. They've seen an increase over the last past year. So those are still, there's still people who want the physical product. Mm-hmm. And our collector's editions and all our special editions we put out, like, again, like you mentioned, Bebop or Psychopass, or we got Space Dandy coming out next season, mm-hmm. those ones like that. The fans have basically chimed in that they really want to see those again. Like, you remember, Zach, back in the day, we used to put out some crazy starter boxes and collector's editions.
Yeah.
And the industry now is, you know, warranted. They all, like, we'll pay for that. We want that. Mm-hmm. And we basically we're happy to provide that.
Yeah. Our first runs that we did this past year, you know, we really tried some new things with Psychopass, and that premium edition containing the soundtrack, the Japanese soundtrack. That was a big deal because that's not something we normally do. It is more expensive to get those licensing, you know, fees and all that stuff. And then we tried it with Kamisama Kiss, also doing a premium edition with all the extra junk in it. Miscellaneous
awesome stuff.
Awesome.
You're saying it's garbage.
Stuff.
I understand.
You had the tote bag in there. You had the charms, the fan, you know, stuff that made sense for the show. And fans seem to really enjoy that, and I hope, you know, we continue doing more cool stuff like that.
I'm so surprised we fit that all in that box. What do you call it? We had the display case for all our past 20 years at Funimation on the Anime Expo and San Diego Comic-Con booths, and I remember taking that out of the booth box, put it in the display case, and trying to put it back in the box. I'm like, how does this all go? This is like a magic portal. It's like a TARDIS trying to get this all back in here.
Yeah, that's that was an interesting conundrum, taking all that stuff out of that box. But in terms of, like, the future, so I guess this is still a matter of show selection. Like, whatever you think has a, like, exact, like, what kind of audience are you looking for when you're, like, I mean, stuff like Attack on Titan, that's obvious. But what are you looking for, like, an audience demographic for this show needs to get a limited edition?
It's both with the audience as well as what type of materials we have at the same time. Because even if a show warrants it, like, oh man, people would really love to get a bunch of stuff with this. If there's not available artwork or available assets to do something with, that makes it really challenging. So you got to be really creative about that. I think that, you know, like Kamisama Kiss, that was an interesting test for us because it was one that was a very heavily performing streaming audience. And we wanted to see if it would actually translate to the physical sales using these, you know, premium edition items, and you know, it's pretty decent. And so there's going to be still some tests here and there, and the market's always changing, so it's going to be the requirements to do something like this is a moving target, and whatever the market dictates at that time and what's available, it's really a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, we're actually a little excited on our end right now because of we get to try new things again. And we basically are like, let's see if they're like this. What are they like that? They've given fan response. We, again, Justin's seeing what people like on Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And we can take that real-time data and go and say, okay, they said they like stuff like this. Can we get this? Again, is the materials available to make this? And then happily sometimes they match up and we can.
Yeah, I mean, well, you're producing a lot of custom physical items at this point. I mean, I assume that bracelet, and that wasn't a bracelet, like a barrette thing, whatever that thing was that was in Kamisama Kiss, like a hair pick or something. There's that, and then the Space Dandy limited editions have all these, you know, replica belt buckle and stuff like that in it. I mean, I assume you just price this stuff out and figure out find a cheap manufacturer for it or something. Like, That's above and beyond what anybody was doing in the mid-2000s. Like, you're past the bubble at this point for limited.
And I think a lot of it, again, goes back to the content of the show. If it's stuff that's cool in the show, that, like, if you're the guy who's just watching this show and be like, man, I really wish I could have that in real life. And then we think about it, like, wow, we could actually do that. Right. It's funny because we can actually materialize these imaginary items that I'm watching in anime and be like, we could really make these things and people would love that. So if there's a good idea and there's a sound business case behind it, it's really up to the team that's working on the show to just come up with the idea and build the whole plan behind and make it a reality. We could really do it for almost anything as long as there's a sound business decision behind it.
I want to see a working Dominator for Psycho Pass 2. That's what I keep asking people for. Keep shooting me down for some reason, but I think it's genius. Just send a waiver and send the gun.
So that means your Escaflowne release will have the pendant and the tarot deck, right? I mean, you can just announce that here. That's okay.
There's many ideas down for that still.
And there's a lot of, ways people could suggest things to us. I mean, we can, if you tell us on these, you know, our social platforms, is the easiest way, and we read... We read a lot of stuff, guys. If you say something nice or mean, we do read it. So just keep that in mind. We have feelings, too.
And I will send you Justin's phone number for $20 a person.
Nope.
So for Bebop, you sold out of those limited editions before the actual release. People were, you know, there was like a short, like, half an hour window on release day where people could actually buy the Amazon version, but then that closed. And it's basically gone forever at this point. And you said straight up, we're not reprinting this because then it's not special anymore for the people who got it. What are you even thinking about another version of that show? I mean, at this stage, because right now the only one's available is the basic edition. I mean, obviously people want limited edition versions of that, and the number you produced was way too small for demand. So, I mean, any thoughts about what's going to happen with that?
Absolutely. Actually, it's good you bring that up, because basically, yes, it is true. We are not going to reprint those premium editions, but it is possible that in the future, possibly create a new one, you know, what was out there. Again, it'll probably take, you know, a little bit because the current one, and of course, these ones took a while to make. But the idea has all been on the table since we saw how fast these ones turned out, and that there's a fan who wants to get it. And some of the critters I know will double dip because they'll be like, oh, I like that one too. I'll get all three or four, or how many are total end up with? And any specific ideas, basically, the fans would love to see in there other than the soundtrack. We've heard that. they're always welcome to share information and send it right to Justin.
No.
Facebook, Twitter, you know, all those blog places.
Right, to Funimation, not me personally.
I think of all the social I send. That's just Justin. Justin is the internet. That's that part of Justin.
Thanks. Adam.
Anytime, man.
So for 2015, it's January. Last year at this time, you guys were announcing your simuldub on Space Dandy, and there was a big launch of that at Otakon Vegas. So that was sort of a distraction from the rest of the year because you already had something big happening. But right now we don't really have a great idea about what's big for this year. So what's to look forward to for 2015 right now?
Well, more Space Dandy stuff, which we're finally going to release that now on like collector's editions. And that's really cool. They've got some very special custom items that are going to be released for the season 1 and 2 releases of Space Dandy. So, continuing that big excitement from last year, we'll hopefully have more big excitement for the home video releases of those.
And definitely one of the things that's been, you know, definitely in my world, which is basically we've made some big updates in the last few months, and we have many more planned for the coming year for Funimation.com, our Funimation streaming service, and our apps. Being one of the big things you might have noticed, just last week, I believe. My God, it's been a week already. We actually rolled out an update to our subscription streaming service, being SubPass for the sub-only, aficionados who want HD sub, simulcast specially, for that kind of thing, or the All Access Pass, which has everything under the sun, dubs and included as well, ad-free. And it's a great way to, support Japan across those two. As well as we've added new queue, we've improved our video player, navigation, speed on site. We've launched,
big deal was launching the new apps.
The new apps, yep. Launched the PS3 with PS4 coming early 2015. I know some people said 2015. We're like, oh, that means November. I'm like, no, early 2015. So it'll be around soon. As well as we're updating our current apps. We're going to look for updates of the ones we've launched years back as well this year. So there's a lot of new improvements that's been added or launching, and with more to come. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this month specifically with the new season, this is legitimately our biggest simulcast season yet, with 17 shows being simulcast on Funimation.com. So that's huge. That's great. That's pairing, with the sub pass, with the all access pass, and doing all that stuff with Funimation.com. It's been a really exciting time. I'm really excited for some of these shows. Some of them are pretty out there, I'll have to say.
Yuri
Arashi's kind of interesting.
There's some pretty awesome stuff here, but I think I saw your review on Death Parade, Zach. I was like, wow, yeah, this is pretty out there. This is awesome. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, that show was really cool. So we'll get into the streaming stuff in a minute, because that's a big, big topic, and I really want to get to it. Well, first of all, you did mention you launched this new subscription tiers. Can you characterize the sales for us at all? I know it's really early.
Oh, how many subscribers you've had for them?
Yeah, for the new subpass and your all access.
Of course, can't give you exact numbers, right. But what I can say basically, there definitely was people wanting the sub pass. The all access pass, which is basically the pass we've had for a while, which everyone's already on board. But people have, we have not seen that a jump off the all access pass. We've seen new blood coming in for the sub pass. That's been a big plus. We saw also good feedback from people, both on Facebook, on our forums, on your forums too. Talking about basically, this is even more affordable than some other options. And basically, I only want subtitle content. They're catering towards me, because I know we're a dub house and we do a lot of inside dubs, but we never want to forget the subtitle fan, especially around simulcast season. So there has been a jump on already we've seen early for the subpass. Mm-hmm.
Definitely an audience that's been waiting for something like this. And we're really glad to be able to offer it to you guys now.
Yeah, well, it all seems like it's part of a larger strategy, that's for sure. So finally, in this, while we're still talking about physical media, I wanted to ask a little bit about Giant Ape, which I think, stop me if I'm wrong here, saw maybe a few more releases last year than it had in the past?
Depending on what type of releases you mean. There's a lot of stuff that we've transitioned into Giant Ape, pretty much anything that's been live action. Right. So Giant Ape has done a lot of kind of re-releases in the past of older content and stuff like that, and a lot of live-action martial arts films in the previous years. This year for Giant Ape has been really interesting. Lost Girl has been doing great. That's been a really great title for us, and it's opening us to a new audience as well with that kind of sci-fi, Buffy the Vampire Slayer type of crowd. Street Fighter Assassin's Fist has been really cool for us too. That one being, tapping into the video game audience for us, with, in my opinion, the first ever representation of a live action Street Fighter that looks like Street Fighter. I was gonna say,
what do you mean, Justin? Ralph Julia was amazing.
Hey, bless his heart. I don't know where to go from there on that one. But
we have Lost Girl Season 5 coming out later this year. I know there's a lot of big Lost Girl fans under Giant Ape. And overall, Giant Ape is a great way to get a little broader of an audience. But still they're very anime-friendly. They're very much – they might watch – a lot of people are anime and other things. This reaches the same audience with their other things.
Yeah, and I think the other things thing is important here, that this year has been more in tune with the other things category that anime fans kind of like, video games, sci-fi, and then, you know, of course, the live-action adaptations of anime and stuff. So Space Battleship Yamato has been really great for us this year. It's amazing when I go, when I've been going to conventions and having it at the booth and seeing the people that pick it up and get really excited about seeing it. They're like, I didn't know this was a, you know, like, what is this? I love Yamato and I love Star Blazers. I didn't realize they made a live action movie. And then I show it to them, the trailer and stuff. And it's really great to be able to see that excitement that a lot of these guys are the older fans that have grown up, you know, with those shows. So that's successful on our end, being able to tap into that market that's familiar with anime, that has an affinity for anime, but then also enjoys this other genre of entertainment.
Right, and so far the selection seems to be kind of working out. You're not seeing a lot of... I mean, you mentioned the one title that obviously underperformed, but generally you're... Have you coalesced into, like, okay, this is the kind of material that the people who are buying this stuff want? Like, you've figured out, like, a strategy for that?
I mean, I think we're getting there, and... we are hopefully approaching some, you know, different stuff that's kind of in this field. There's still going to be some experimental titles that happen through Giant Ape, I would say. But we're always looking for the best titles that would, you know, feel would be relevant to our audience interests.
Yeah, our audience's tastes change and we try to, you know, grow with them. But we think we've figured out what they are currently. But we know that we, if we stay just there, then we won't be in their taste anymore. So we got to keep looking for the what's the next big thing.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting this year to see what happens. All right. So let's get into streaming a little bit. I want to talk about licensing and the landscape for licensing right now, because I know it's changed a lot just in the last couple of years in terms of how much you're paying and what you're paying for. And in order to get there, we kind of need to start in general with streaming. So this season, this winter season, y'all have a tremendous amount of Region 1, at least North American, exclusive rights for streaming. That's unprecedented. You guys haven't done that before, had this many shows where you can only watch them. If you're in America or Canada, you can only watch them at Funimation.com. Normally, that's Crunchyroll's thing. Now they're handling the global rights for all that stuff. This is a big shift, and a lot of people, it has been the talk of the last week while we've been doing Preview Guide, while the winter season's been rolling out, is that suddenly everybody has to watch everything on Funimation.com. What changed? And when did this strategy come into play? When was there something specific about the winter season that let's spend all this money on this season? I mean, how did this come to be?
Overall, basically, the strategy has been from, you know, the start, basically before streaming even existed, basically looking at physical product and everything else that led to the same kind of feeling that streaming is, how do we get the best products and best shows possible into the hands of the fans in the way they want? Don't force them. Like, we forced people to stay with VHS, we went to DVD. We didn't force people to stay with DVD, we went to Blu-ray. And people want streaming. And basically, we looked at it and said, we need to start going after and continue to go after the best shows possible from a streaming perspective as well. That was just something basically which just continued on, and it's almost the, you know, part of the blood of Funimation.
I think this this year and this season in particular is a little bit different in regards to all of the site improvements we've had and the subpass tier and you know, the additional apps and all that stuff this year. So Funimation is, you know, getting to that point that we can, you know, satisfy the consumer how they want, as Adam was saying, you know, provide the anime the way they want to be provided to. And, you know, we're always trying to grow our company. And I think this is a great way for fans to also support Japan directly through us and, you know, and for more anime to be made in general.
Sure. But you're, this is, I think everybody watching this can see this is clearly an attempt at serious competition with Crunchyroll for those dollars, for those eyeballs. Because before this, they dominated the streaming space completely in North America, I think. You guys were a player, obviously. This season, everyone's got to go to you. So I'm just, you know, the question is, like, how big of a push was this? Was it, you know... How much did you really have to lay out in order for this to all happen?
Well, we can't go into the specifics, of course, right, of all the contracts and things like that. But we can say basically we look broader than just one competitor or two competitors out there and just basically say, if the, we want to look at the streaming market in general and say, how do we get the best content out of it and give it to our fans? Again, now that our basically we have more improved apps, new apps, and on things like that, and say, where's that direction lie? So it's not as much looking at what the competition's doing as what's best we can do physically with our cloud being Funimation for so many years. And but so what does the fans want? And we spent a lot of time figuring out what that was. And again, as you mentioned, we stumbled in the past few times. But we've learned a lot, and things have definitely improved in the right direction. So we're happy to hear that people are spending this season talking about our simulcast this time.
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
Well, let me put it this way. Why wouldn't we do that?
Exactly. Now, that's an answer that makes total sense to me, because obviously this is a quality and quantity game, right? I mean, it's the number of shows. You have to come here if you want to see anything that people are talking about. You obviously, I mean, spent a lot of money to make sure that that happened. This season, it's a shift. That's really, I guess, all I'm sort of pointing out.
Mm. I mean, we're trying to do the best, and we're trying to provide as much content as possible. And to do that in this current market, this is the market we now live in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You got to change with the world as it changes.
The truism is that the thing people want from a licensing contract right now is global streaming, exclusive global streaming rights. So you get a show, you can stream it. Everyone will have to use your service to watch it here, to watch it in Europe, to watch it in Scandinavia, which keeps coming up for some reason, Spain, you know, all those other places. That's where all the money is right now. That's the truism. Is that true? Would you agree with
that? I would say that when it comes to our business model, what we do is we always try to acquire as many rights as possible whenever we can. Because I mean, we're very aware that streaming rights are extremely important. Home video rights are very important to us as well, but also there's all the rights that we do. I mean, what Funimation does, you know, a little differently than some of the other people in the anime industry is we service all aspects of, you know, this licensing model when it comes to merchandise and, you know, DVD products and theatrical and all this stuff. So for us, it's still, and as how pretty much has always been, we try to get as many rights as possible. Even in the older days, when we first started, you know, licensing content, streaming wasn't an option. There wasn't streaming at that time. So now we're just incorporating that into everything we do altogether. So with every, you know, of course, every contract and every licensor is different and all that stuff. But, you know, we think streaming's important at the initial promotion of the brand, but we're all about this brand as a whole. So while streaming is kind of like you said, that plum that's up front on the initial side of things, we want to take an anime title and brand and create an entire life cycle with it, from you know, the beginning of it till, I mean, what Cowboy Bebop now is, you know, 15 plus years later, we're still doing stuff with it. I mean, that's kind of a, you know, different, everybody wants to always see Cowboy Bebop, but we're still releasing titles and merchandise and stuff for things that are, I don't know how many years old.
There's a symbiotic relationship between the rights almost, where basically, again, home video is still going and chucking along for us. And with streaming, basically, those streaming kids who say, I just don't ever want to buy a physical product, they'll buy a t-shirt, they'll buy a wall scroll. So basically, we tie them together and say they're important. We don't really weigh them out, probably as you're thinking about, we do. But because basically, again, as Justin said, we look at basically not just this season and then shuffle along. It's basically, this is starts, but it grows into something else.
So would you say, given that the truism is that, well, global streaming rights are the sweetest plum, that's what you want, your biggest market and your focus is still North America?
Correct.
Okay. That's the answer I was looking for.
Okay.
Thanks.
So talking about on the North America side, yes. I mean, that is still our focus at this time.
Okay. So the other truism that I kind of wanted to ask about, something that's sort of been bandied about, is like, well, this is the new reality, is that home video is obviously still your bread and butter. Revenue streams from places like Netflix and Hulu have become extremely important to any content producer, provider, distributor's bottom line. Is that true for you? And can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with Netflix and Hulu?
Each is an important and incredible meaning partner, and we value the relationship we've cultivated with them both. There's really as much as we really can go into that, because being that they're both important, there's always things you know, going on with our worlds and their worlds. So we really can't go into too much of the detail of that, unfortunately.
I also wouldn't limit it to just Netflix and Hulu. We work with a wide variety of partners. Amazon Instant Video, iTunes, Xbox, Microsoft, doing all those things. So PlayStation, Network and all those. I mean, they're all great partners to be working with, and they all have their, very important respective channels. And we just want to, work with them as well as we can.
Right. You work with a lot of different partners, but the truism is, or keep using that word, that the biggest dollars come from billion-dollar entities like Netflix and Hulu. Like, those are your most lucrative streaming contracts.
I wouldn't necessarily say that's 100% true. I would say that spread across the board, working with all the different partners is equally important. We're not, at this point, we're not just focusing on doing one or the other because they're making us the most money or whatever it might be. I think it's the basis of having anime in all these places and working with all these different platforms. When it comes down to it, we make money everywhere, and that's great for us.
Right. And to wit, if you could ballpark a percentage for us, if you're even willing to do that, percentage of your business that is still home video versus stream?
I actually don't have those numbers in my off the top of my head. So, yeah, what do you call it? Unfortunately, I don't think we can.
Okay. But would you rate them as, just a ballpark, equal importance? One's still, home video still a little bit more important?
Can't really share right now this with that. I don't really know.
I would just say they're both very important,
yeah.
And we are maintaining and growing both sides of the business.
Okay. All right, then. Obviously, yeah. Speaking of licensing contracts, I know obviously you can't talk about exact numbers, but are the prices starting to creep up? Is a show more expensive for you now than it was post-bubble? And since, Adam, I know you at least were around in 2005, 2004, doing this
I didn't
stuff.
Exist yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
You are young. You are very young.
In this particular field. You know what I mean. Are you seeing...
It means I'm old.
We're not getting back to those bubble prices, are we?
We don't see a bubble. We have not seen a bubble in prices along the lines of with the streaming content. We can say that we have seen the global economy is improving, and due to this growth, there has been an increase in the number of animes produced in Japan just this last year.
No kidding.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you guys are reviewing them. You're very much aware.
Yeah.
So we see this as a direct result of people watching legal streaming content, because those dollars everyone spends on those views are going right back to Japan. So basically, that growth in the streaming has basically grown the actual number of anime being produced.
Really? So there's a direct correlation between relative financial success of streaming and production?
That's the way we feel. I wouldn't say we have exact this number equals this number, but basically the way we looked at this and the way we talked to multiple people on the inside of the industry on both sides of the globe, we're definitely seeing basically that your views in one way or another are going back to the original Japanese creators, the licensors, the people who actually do the work. And by seeing that streaming, and they're very aware of it. They're very aware of what their success rate is globally, as you've said. So that does come into factor. Basically, can we make another show because they got money from the last show?
Yeah, I would say that streaming now having a new audience in the streaming market also provides, a different revenue stream and a different viewer stream that probably wasn't as prevalent before, and so maybe that's alluding to more opportunities for different types of shows or more shows to be produced.
Yeah, so I guess it's kind of hard to... I don't know how I feel about the fact that apparently it's our fault that 200 new shows are getting made every year.
Yeah, way to go, A&N. Still so good at your job, you get more work.
That's life right there, guys.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the website, because there a lot of the questions we got and a lot of the chatter now that everybody is using Funimation.com to watch new shows. A lot of people don't like that website. I mean, I'm sure that you hear this way more than I do, but it is the bulk of what I hear. They don't mind your player, but they don't like your website. Is there a lot of work? And obviously not as a blanket, like everyone hates it. It's just there's a lot of people complaining. I'm sure you've seen it. Are there improvements coming? What kind of model are you looking at for moving forward if you're going to be having this much exclusive content where people have to go to you, is that feedback going to play into, you know, the way the site is structured from here on out? Are you looking at another redesign?
We're not looking at a full, like, as you saw, like a year or two ago, like, let's scratch the site and rebuild the new site. But we're definitely looking into a whole bunch of improvements. Some we actually, again, have rolled out, as you mentioned, the video player.
I think a lot of that feedback has already been put into play, and we're already making tweaks on the back end if you can't see them.
Right.
And then I think there have been some front end changes over the past, you know, couple months and stuff too. And it's a living, breathing website that's going to be constantly affected by user feedback and more content as we're producing it.
Yeah, and we definitely have taken some of the feedback from every source, both social, emails, forums, along those lines, and cultivated it based on a lot of our updates on it. Like, besides Subpass being one of the biggest ones people wanted, we had a lot of menu bars beforehand, and now we have watch, shop, news, simulcast. We simplified for people, like, I don't know where to go. And we have also heard basically from people who actually, again, you've heard it, I'm sure, when they complain about something they don't like on the site, and we're like, we fixed that 3 months ago.
Right.
So basically, there's a perception problem too with it, which we're slowly getting out there and saying, we've updated this, let everyone know, and then remind them, hey, this works now. It's different than 3 months ago, 6 months ago. It's, you take a look and check out the new stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, people still think you edit the shit out of Dragon Ball and like.
Yeah. We get emails saying, oh, we hate your Naruto dub every now and again. So, you know, you can only do so much.
Yeah. The other complaint that comes up that services a lot, and I admit I get frustrated with this too, is that when you guys pick up a show, I got to wait an extra like 3 days for it to air. And by then the fan subs are out. And for whatever reason, Crunchyroll has the global rights and they're on time. So I'm wondering, what's with all the delay casts? Why is that happening? And can we look forward to that not happening anytime in the future?
Actually, most of the ones we've had now, besides like sometimes basically episode ones, there's a rollout, getting the ball started, the materials and things like that. There might be a delay with along those lines, just getting everything going. But most of them now are basically 1 to 3 hour delays. We have a couple delay casts, but the majority of them, basically, they're right after the Japanese are aired. So basically, there was a problem in the past when they were super delayed, but now basically, if you're a subscriber, you should be seeing them pretty quickly after the Japanese release.
Well, just this season, we had a couple premieres that were, you've got one that's a full week behind Crunchyroll, and Yurikuma Arashi was 2 or 3 days after its premiere. Twitter went crazy talking about that show. Everyone was downloading the fan subs. That kind of delay, I would imagine, can really hurt your bottom line for a hotly anticipated show, because the fans want it now. They know when it airs in Japan. They see Spain's getting it from Crunchyroll on Sunday or Monday, and you guys are like, well, we'll have it for you Wednesday. I mean, doesn't that hurt your bottom line?
It's definitely something we're very aware of. Again, that was a special case, what do you call that, or actual lateness on that one episode. It was silly. They're fixed going forward. But there are some, again, that are delayed by a little bit, but those are the minority of the shows, not the majority of the shows. Again, we strive to have as many as possible within 1 to 3 hours of release on a regular basis. So we apologize for the delays of initial ones, and again, episode ones and things like that. But we definitely strive for having the regular ones on the majority of them being very, very quickly behind them, because, yeah, we don't want people going to the fan subs. We want people going away from our service or any other legitimate service to watch something.
For those delays, are those baked into the contracts, or is it just a matter of manpower and making sure like you have the resources to get these things up in time?
I don't know specifically from the contract perspective, but I know it's generally never a resource problem. It might be something else entirely, but I'm not 100% sure on. But it's what we call the resources. We generally know an idea of how many simulcasts we could get a season, and we either staff up or make people aware extra hours are coming, kind of thing, when these things hit.
I would imagine you did that this time.
Oh, yeah. we made people very aware you're going to get some more hours coming.
Okay. All right, moving on. Let's talk a little bit about localization. You guys announced a big thing this year, which was simul-dubs, so to speak.
Broadcast dubs, yes.
Yeah, broadcast dubs. Which is an interesting, and I thought it was a pretty smart move. That's sort of your, when it comes to streaming, that's definitely your ace in the hole, right? I mean, Funimation dubs everything. That's sort of your big deal. Applying that that skill to your streaming initiative seems kind of like a no-brainer, but obviously it would have been a huge technical undertaking. Can you walk us through the process of one of these broadcast dubs? I mean, effectively, you're doing these in a week. An episode in a week. So can you tell us what that's like?
Yeah, so this is a very interesting thing that we started doing with the Funimation broadcast dubs. I mean, it's very much like creating a standard release dub. It's just a more pressing timeline. We basically use the simulcast materials, which can vary from the which I'm not sure a lot of fans are fully aware, but you know, you've seen comparison videos from the broadcast materials versus the home video materials, and there can be some pretty distinct differences. Sometimes that's with the even with the dialogue. A lot of times it's just the animation and stuff. So typically we waited for the final materials to release a dub and all that, but now we're working dubs off of the simulcast. So it's about a 4-week process currently from when we get the materials. And that's important because sometimes the materials shifting with how they're delivered, because in Japan, I mean, they're working on these things. Sometimes they're not done with the materials until a day before it airs or whatever the heck it is. So the standard process is still there. It's just for dubbing stuff. It's just compressed into this 4-week timeline about. Now, the tricky part with this versus doing the dubs on the home video side is your actors have to come in weekly like they would do for a, you know, a show that's being broadcast on, you know, U.S. television, a Family Guy or a Simpsons or whatever, where you're recording episode after episode, where we typically would record an entire series with one actor. He'll do all 24 episodes in like a week. Now we're doing one episode in this 4 weeks, and that involves all the different people coming in because we record one at a time. If people weren't aware, all of our dubs are pretty much individual actors recording each line separately. And right now we're at this 4-week timeline, which, I mean, it's pretty good compared to the who knows how long it took before. Sometimes it would take months upon months to get some stuff done because of people's work hours and stuff. So we're very much working out a system that works well for this compressed timeline. And, you know, we're delivering it on time right now. And it's a very interesting thing to be doing with the inside internally in the office. You want to make sure you get actors you can trust that are very reliable. Think about if one guy gets sick. If the main guy in this show got sick for like a week, that would, you know, significantly affect some timeline. So we've got to be really creative and really press for time on some of these.
Just in logistics.
Yeah, that's kind of the general gist of it. I don't know if there's anything more specific you want me to go into.
Well, is the process, it sounds like it would be more expensive.
I don't know the exact cost, but I believe basically the process is not really changing as much. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's about as much as doing your standard dub. It's definitely more of an expensive than doing a subtitle release, of course. But obviously, there's no extra, like, we're not printing anything last minute or short runs. It's all bring an actor in that you would bring in for maybe another show that week and have them record on just this show. And basically, it's more about just getting the logistics on the back end set up that says, this mm-hmm. is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. And if X doesn't happen, then Y needs to happen.
Yeah, we just have a lot less leeway on timing. Right. In regards to expenses, really the only big expense that might happen down the road is having to get actors in to re-record things mm-hmm. when the home video Blu-ray materials comes in that has been expanded upon, if they added in a scene or changed some of the dialogue or whatever the heck it might be. So that could be, you know, an additional cost later on down the road. In regards to the recording costs up front, I mean, not a huge change because it's the same rates. It's just you got to make sure you're using talent and a team that knows how to get it done in this timeline.
Right. Yeah, I guess it seemed like a natural conclusion where it's like, well, we used to do something like this in 2 weeks. Doing it in this model means we're taking 3 months. And so it just sounds naturally like it would be more expensive to have a production running for 12 weeks like that.
Yeah. It might be a little better to clarify, but since we're never actually stopping productions, we're always working on something. We don't have to start something up. We just got to plug something into a studio.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to our staff that works on the back end, you know, our engineers and our directors, they're all on staff at the company. So it's not like, you know, we're having to contract additional people to complete these. It's pretty much the same guys doing the same stuff. They're just doing it in this timeline. And when they're not doing this, they're doing something else. So, you know, it's not really an increase on financials on that end, right there, for that specifically.
So it really, so in other words, it's not like you had to build a new infrastructure of any kind in order to get this to happen. It was just time management.
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Understand. Okay, so when you announced this initiative, you said, we're doing Cycle Pass 2, and everyone said, of course you are. And then you said, we're doing Laughing Under the Clouds, and everyone said, why? And I'm curious how you came to the decision on those two shows specifically. Cycle Pass is a little obvious, but the other one, what's up with that?
We looked at both these shows. Basically, first we're looking at basically what shows we could do as to what would be a good launch one in that season. And again, Cycle Pass 2, besides being a great show, had a built-in fan base, so that one made a lot of sense. Looking at Laughing Under the Clouds, it looked like a very promising show for us. And it was also a different genre than Cycle Pass 2, so we weren't just overlapping two shows getting the same audience. Mm-hmm. They were two very different shows that were a possibility to actually do a broadcast up for. We said, let's give this a shot. And that's really about how that came about.
All right. There was some speculation that it was sort of like, well, we know this one's a hit. We'll see how it performs with a dub. And this one is an unknown quantity, so we'll see how that one performs with the dub. Like, there was a contrast between the two shows in terms of, as an experiment, in terms of doing this for the first time. Mm-hmm. Kind of made sense.
I mean, that's definitely something to, you know, you don't want to just, you want to have a good data set to see if this is something that people would want and that we should continue doing. So, I mean, not to say that we didn't think it would underperform or anything like that, but it's different content with different types of audiences.
Right. It gives us good data too, basically looking at the two different types of audiences, which ones might, again, watch the broadcast dub. So basically we can go, oh, okay, this type of fan, what we call our demographics watching, because we can see who's kind of watching on the back end, basically likes this, and they want to watch the dub version of that over the sub version, or they will wait, or do we see a dip on sub for the dub, and things like that.
So was it a success? Are you going to keep doing this?
I can safely say we were happy to say this wasn't a success. We saw an immediate jump in subscribers after we announced this. So we were very, very happy for that. And fans seem to basically very much appreciate it. That was, again, we took us, you know, 4 weeks after the simulcast, but it's only 4 weeks after the simulcast. So a lot of people basically were seeing that happen too. So very, very happy to see it was working.
Yeah, and you know, we will want to continue this. We're happy to actually announce that in this interview, we will actually have more broadcast dubs coming this winter season, and we're still finalizing really what shows and when they would start to stream, but you know, stay tuned to, you know, all of our social and blog and stuff for the news on that. And I mean, again, as we're moving forward and doing more of this, I said earlier, you know, we're not getting more people. We're kind of working with existing staff, but you know, as we grow this kind of initiative, you know, we hope to grow everything along with it in regards to our resources and everything too, so that it's something that we can continue to bring to these, you know, dub fans that want to see this content faster and more relevant to the market.
I mean, I don't suppose you can say if there might be more than two this time around.
It's possible. We don't have a full listing yet, and a lot of it will also determine, you know, based on materials and how if we could get materials earlier, that'd be amazing. Of course, then it depends on kind of our relationships with our partners in Japan and all that stuff. So we'll see. It's going to be a case-by-case basis. But we do expect to have, you know, additional ones beyond what has existed so far.
Yeah, we would want to do as many as possible. So we're going to see how many we can do.
Well, within reason. I mean, this is still the sort of thing where if you're going to be licensing this much material in a season, I mean, it's more than you would normally... Like, the amount of shows that you license is more than you would normally license for home video in a single season. Mm-hmm. So dubbing all of it seems, that would be crazy, right?
Maybe not as much as you think.
Maybe we're a little crazy.
Crazy in the good way. So, no, I would say basically, again, the jury's out on this, and we're willing to, you know, obviously see what we can do as far as we can push it within business reason to do that.
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting to watch. Okay. So, lastly, in this particular line of questioning, we have to talk about Evangelion 3.33. I got more questions about this than anything else. People want to know.
You are totally shocked.
People want to know what the hell is going on with this movie. Can you tell us what the hell is going on with this movie?
All right, so Evangelion 3.33, we're actually working directly with the Japanese studio and the original creator on this upcoming home video release. It's actually a really unique opportunity that kind of presented itself to us. A lot of it having to do with 3.33 being so different in plot points from any of the previous storylines in the Evangelion universe. And so the creator, you know, kind of approached, and we're thrilled that he's wanting to be so heavily involved on this project. And Studio Kara actually even decided, you know, they wanted to do their own special subtitle track for this release. So it's a pretty interesting opportunity to be able to work directly with Hideaki Anno and Studio Kara to create this release that's, you know, going to be as true to their vision as possible. But, you know, unfortunately, that would mean there would be a longer than normal delay on producing this product. We actually needed to go back to the original dub to see if there was anything that we needed to update there as well. So there actually was some re-recording that we needed to do. But with Evangelion being such an important brand to both Funimation and anime fans, you know, we figured this delay is going to be worth it to be able to work with, you know, the creator and the studio. And you know, after 3.33 does release on Blu-ray, the fans are going to have the best product possible with the original creator's backing. And that's something that's, you know, we couldn't say no to, really. That's really amazing. And we're actually looking at releasing it later this year. So no official dates yet, but it should be releasing later this year. So stay tuned. We'll, as soon as we get more information and get a hard date down, we'll definitely let you guys know.
Okay, well, that's great. The script, I think, is a little away from you on this, because the timeline you just gave me and what everybody is talking about, you had a localized version of this. It sounds like Kahara saw it, didn't like what they saw, and now they're making, you know, this is a bigger show of them saying, hey, we're stepping in and making sure this is going to be accurate. That you don't normally see that. Like, KyoAni doesn't say, hey, Sentai released this show we made, and they, you know, we weren't happy with the subtitles, so we're going to step in and make sure it's right. Obviously, you would have released this a lot earlier, but that's kind of what it looks like. I mean, that's a little unprecedented, especially for them to be public about the fact that they are stepping in and doing this.
We understand them people thinking that. That's not the case here, luckily. It's very much based on the look at a film like 3.33, which we've had a chance to look at, which is a very complex story. And Kara and Anno basically looked at this saying, we have a specific thing we want to get across here on this one, and we want to make sure you specifically get it across. And basically, it wasn't less like, you need to do this. It was more along the lines of, we see some things in our vision we want to make sure gets across. Let's work together closer. We'll actually put you in touch with the creator to get this done so it is exactly the way he wants it to be put out.
But that's all happening after you localized it once already.
Correct. Basically, the timing, I really can't go into exactly when basically he saw it, and basically when they said this conversation started. I wasn't privy to any of those conversations. I just know that they did happen.
Okay. Well, I'm sure people look forward to that release a lot. I know those are big sellers for you, and I personally am excited for that movie, but this is interesting. I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this before in terms of a Japanese studio saying, whoa.
Anime is a unique space.
Yeah, sure.
And Evangelion is a very unique product.
That it is.
Yeah, no. We're kidding.
Still so don't have 4.44 yet, so we got some time.
Yeah, you can announce here that you're going to license the Blu-rays of the TV show, right?
Yeah, there it is. That's, totally can't do that here. That would be wonderfully can't do that here.
Oh, you can't do it here, but you'll do it later this year? Is that
I see. It's like you're a journalist or something, Zach.
There's no news.
Don't confuse me with a journalist. Yeah.
At some point, Eva will be on my shelf. I'll say that much in Blu-ray. That's what I'm hoping for.
I don't know anything about it, so.
Yeah. Yep.
If I got to buy those imports, I'll do it, I think.
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. If it's either coming here by someone, or I'm going to go buy those there.
If I use my old copies and just draw the Blu-ray logo on it, that works, right?
I'll Photoshop you one, man.
Okay. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, before we get to Twitter, let's talk a little bit about retail. You launched your own online store last year. That was the big thing we talked about, I think, the last time you were on.
Yep.
And I guess rather than sort of, you know, go over, I mean, I would imagine you're going to, the answer about performance is probably the same, right? It's a wait and see. I mean, you can give us a little bit of performance statistics.
Yeah, luckily it can, because since it's launched, we've seen a overwhelming amount of people actually basically very excited with it. Our goal was to offer an online store where fans could easily find and buy pretty much any Funimation thing they want. Merch is slowly getting in there, but now we have DVD and Blu-ray, of course. But we've seen the success for the store was actually bigger than even we expected. We had some high hopes, really? But they blew past those.
What do you attribute that to?
We attracted to a mix of things. Mix being that basically having limited editions and offering them on a regular basis at a good discount, as well as having exclusive things like the Goku Funko Pop items. We saw a giant t-shirts run recently on our Simulcast t-shirts that came out, that actually just put out. There was no sale involved. We said, hey guys, got some cool t-shirts, and people came running. So we were very happy to see that. And I will say, this is definitely just physical product. This is not including any of the Simulcast stuff you'd buy through the website either. So the store has definitely been going the right direction, and we're still making more improvements to it. So basically the shopping experience has improved on the back end in the last 3 to 6 months, and we've got more to come.
Right. One of the big things I wanted to ask about were retail exclusive SKUs. So you've got Bebop had an Amazon exclusive, and then you had your own store exclusive. Space Dandy's the same way. Obviously that worked out for Bebop. You know, time will tell on Dandy. Is that something that you are going to be doing more of? So, like, if you want these goodies, you got to get it from us. You want these other goodies, you got to get it from Amazon. And are there any other retailers that you're considering doing that with?
Yes, definitely. Basically, we're looking to make more of these. Which shows and how many are, you know, basically we go by a case-by-case basis. But working with Amazon and other vendors for sure. Like, we actually had a Walmart exclusive Attack on Titan DVD for part one and part two out there. They had the broader audience. So we're definitely keeping our eyes open on all vendors out there. So we're not just limiting it to Amazon. They're a great partner, but we definitely want to have those out for multiple different areas and sites as we find more things that actually fit the right site with the right brand as well. And we will definitely continue to have ones on our site for exclusives for Funimation.com ones.
Okay, right. So it makes sense with Amazon and Walmart. Smaller, maybe not so much?
No, they're definitely going to keep our eyes open for other possibilities out there. We definitely have not cut off or said, here's our line of retailer and nothing else. There could be a possibility. We're keeping, since we're still kind of new to the online market with our store, we're not really discounting any ideas yet.
Right, and that actually leads into my next question in terms of smaller retailers. Your partners that you've been working with for a really long time, like Right Stuff, and I guess Right Stuff is sort of the store we can use as an example here. Did launching your own store impact your relationship with Right Stuff in any way? Because I would imagine going into that space, I don't know. I mean, as a retailer, I guess I would have a hard time not going like, well, you're cramping my style here. You know, like, this is not cool. Did you launching your own store impact your relationship with some of your other retail partners?
First, I'd say I wouldn't call Right Stuff a small vendor, but comparatively, I know what you're saying.
Right, you know what I'm saying.
Right Stuff, Amazon.
Compared to
yes.
Amazon, that's the only comparison I'm making here.
Yes, exactly. No, we are big fans of Sean's. We have been, and we always will be, and all our other vendors like that. So, I really haven't sat down with our sales team to see what the full impact is or conversations were on these pieces like that. But I know they're still a part of our plan currently in the future as much as they were in the past. Now, where that divides, as in exclusives, non-exclusives, other things on the back end, again, basically all different discounts and things like that you would do with a regular vendor, I really am not 100% sure on. But I know basically they're still part of the plan.
Okay. All right. Can you tell us a little bit more about your demographics in terms of who your audience is, who's buying what? I mean, Lance would always come on. You know, we miss Lance. I wish he would.
We love Lance.
But he would always come on and share demographic information with us. And I'm curious if you have anything like that for.
Yeah, I mean, I think in regards to our demographics for Funimation, I mean, we're still seeing a large amount of both, you know, the hardcore, as you'd put them, and casual fans buying our products and using the streaming service. And it's definitely across both genders as well. It's interesting to see which age groups prefer which medium or genre, though. You know, for example, people consider 18 to 30, or sorry, 17 or 13 to 17, or 18 to 24 as the kind of bread and butter for selling entertainment goods, which, I mean, both are great demos. But actually, the 35 plus demo is a really strong contender when it comes to both shopping and streaming. And they've got the most disposable income. They've got time. They're kind of set in their life, and they know what they want, and they get what they want when they want it. Mm-hmm. And so they're, you know, more likely to pay for stuff that are like collector's editions. They're more out there to get the, you know, the special stuff and consume as much as they can, you know, and. In the time that they have available. And so, you know, that 35 plus demo is really awesome for us. Though, I mean, again, the 18 to 24 and the 13 to 17, both still great. But actually, sorry?
No, I was saying we love them all. I mean, so yeah. All the demos are great. And a lot of discussion that we've seen online also that they say that, you know, people, that girls don't buy anime. They might watch a lot of it, but they don't buy it. But we've seen the opposite of that, actually, in some places, and actually most places. We see a lot of girls buying home video products at conventions, on our store, and a lot of female-oriented shows stream really well, like Kamisama Kiss or Brothers Conflict.
But that's not to say that they only consume female-oriented shows, quote-unquote.
Correct.
I mean, these same female audiences are watching, you know, a lot of the shoujo stuff, or, I mean, Attack on Titan, you wouldn't necessarily, it depends on who you ask. It appeals to everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of DBZ fans that are, you know, females, obviously, too. So, females are a very good part of our buying audience.
They even actually are some of the audience that are buying fan service titles. We actually see both streaming and watching of like DxD or Sekirei and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think at this point in this day and age, it's largely silly to say like, well, girls wouldn't like this. Like, mm-hmm. You'll only get in trouble for saying anything like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you're surprised. We'll still hear like, oh, they'll watch it, but they won't buy it. And like, no, they're buying. They are shopping.
Or they'll, you know, they just read manga or whatever. Like,
right.
They only buy manga. That's yeah. Like, these are all these common misconceptions that are maybe created at a point in time. I mean, we're in this crazy age of anime now, guys. It's the new age of everyone can consume everything all the time. And so I think it's created a platform for people to find shows that they normally wouldn't have had access to before, and now they can just buy everything all the time, whenever they want.
Yeah, when you mentioned the whole, well, some people say online, the girls don't buy things, I was going to stop you and say, no one credible says that.
There you go.
It's a mass group. That's what I'm really like that.
Okay. All right, so let's get to some of these Twitter questions here. Daydreams UK asks, when will we outside the US hear more about plans to expand streaming territories so we can watch on Funimation as well?
Oh, well, actually, you know, we've already been in the UK and Australia, you know, through our distribution partners, you know, Manga and Mad Men and all that. We're actually finalizing some plans for South and Central America, though, so that's really cool. So, you know, as we get more information, we'll be sure to let you guys know. And that's kind of where we are right now.
Okay. Oh, my cat wants to join in on this conversation.
Hey, Boston.
Trick the TM asks, and I actually got this from a few people. He's saying both you and Pony Canyon USA, Pony Can, their new physical media initiative, say that you have the rights to Cute Earth Defense Force High. Now, I just to clarify here, I know there is a distinction here. They are planning on releasing the physical home media version. You have the North American streaming rights for it, correct?
Yes, we do have those rights. I can't really confirm what rights they have, but some cats are non-exclusive, so other places will carry it as well as us. So that's just basically what the reason that is. Basically, it's not like we split a contract or anything like that. It's just the license store will give it out to multiple places, and we just don't have exclusivity because either we didn't pay for it or it wasn't offered or multiple different reasons. But I heard wonderful things about the show. My you know, Charlene Ingram keeps telling me I need to watch it.
But to boil it down, there's no confusion between you and Pony Canyon over who has the home video rights for that in North America.
Not as far as I know. I don't believe. Justin, you know what we announced with that? Was that just simulcast?
To be honest, I don't have it off the top of my head what rights we announced. But
whatever we did announce, that's what we have.
Okay. Yeah, I know you haven't announced that video. Okay. Branko Bergson asks, how many customers end up purchasing complete or limited edition sets of series after purchasing like the separate parts. So, who, you know, do you ever see information about people who are buying the complete series after buying part one and two?
It definitely happens. We don't have, you know, specific sales numbers we could share, but we do see a good amount of people. And, you know, if it's a series they really like, picking up the additional parts and seasons on a regular basis, I mean, definitely happens. You know, there's different types of releases for different types of consumers. And some consumers are the types that want to buy every single piece of it as it comes out, and some want to wait for it. So it just depends on the type of person, and it's enough to warrant on either end to do both.
Okay. He also asks about Funimation appearing on an anime production committee, but it, if I'm not mistaken, Gen Fukunaga's name is on plenty of anime series.
You're kind of there. Basically, we've collaborated in the past with Japanese companies in a very similar way. Our co-pros, like Dragon Age and Afro Samurai, is probably what you're referring to a lot of.
Yeah.
As well as we also expect to deepen our relationship with Japanese companies to get content to the fans whenever we can. Space Dandy, for example, while we were not on the committee, we were able to get in early enough cooperating with them to help speed its release to all the foreign markets, including ours in North America. So basically, anytime we can work with a committee or be part of something like that to bring content faster for the fans, we do.
Also asked about the live-action Attack on Titan movies, you know.
I've heard those are neat. We have nothing on that yet.
Yeah, a little early for that.
Yeah.
Okay. He did it, and I'm curious about this myself. So Dragon Ball Z, I was just joking about this earlier, appears in the likely like 99% chance to win Best Picture winner Boyhood. It's in that movie. I don't know if either of you have seen it.
I should. Yeah, really been meaning to.
Couple of Philistines in the, podcast here today.
We're just lame, that's all.
Well, did they have to go through you? I mean, you're the master licensor, right?
Go ahead.
Okay. basically, as far as I know, they didn't go through us for anything. But I'm not 100% sure. Basically, our license department might have done that, but we didn't get any update before this interview about that. But yeah, normally when people do the kind of stuff, they either go through Toei directly or through us. That's case-by-case basis. But I'm not aware of that. But I'm very curious to see what references they have in this movie for this.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you know in Christina Aguilera's music video, there's some Dragon Ball GT in the background or something.
Really?
Weird and funny. Strange. Anyway.
It pops up in strange places all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Not just old hookup t-shirts.
GT of all things also, you know.
Yeah. Everyone's favorite, GT. all right. Roots of Justice asks, since Garo the Animation seems to be doing okay, I mean, obviously we have no metric for any of this, is there a chance of seeing live action series or some tokusatsu picked up? Obviously, you can't give us specifics, but have you ever looked at tokusatsu material and thought maybe?
I'm not on our licensing team, so I don't know exactly what they've looked at, but I do know they look at almost everything that comes through. Now, being in live action, that's always a trickier part. A lot of times when it comes to the live action stuff, especially if it's older content, that's a little different, a little harder to kind of lump into everything else. So nothing that I'm aware of, but you never know.
Anything's possible. Yeah, I've not heard anything about that yet myself either.
Okay. All right. Jose CNN asks, why did you decide to modify Cowboy Bebop's frame rate from 1080 60i on the Japanese Blu-rays to 1080 24p on the US Blu-rays? Now, we should clarify, this is a question specifically for Clarine Harp, who was, you mentioned she was busy today, but she did send along some answers, right?
Yeah, she's sorry she couldn't talk, basically. Other things, unfortunately, pressing matters had came up. But she did send across saying that this was done for encoding efficiencies, as most Funimation titles are converted from interlaced to progressive.
Okay. Well, there you go.
There it is.
Okay. Yanagi 808 wants to know any plans for digital only media purchasing. So this is download to own, he's asking about.
We've done that in the past. It's definitely something that we have looked at multiple times. So I'd say stay tuned. It might happen, might not, but it's definitely something we've noted and has been penciled down multiple occasions. Yeah. For should we, shouldn't we, should we, shouldn't
yeah.
we?
It has definitely been discussed.
Yes.
What the discussion leads, don't know yet.
You know, it's weird because, like, people bring that up a lot, like, the download to own. I've never seen anybody gain any real traction with it. Like, it's streaming or rental. Subscription or rental, that's it. Like, those...
We've seen some download to own, for sure. Actual, you know, numbers to save it, there is a value to it. Yeah. But when we did it last time, it was three websites ago, and the way you downloaded it was just not conducive for a shopper.
And so I mean, that's why we stopped. The industry as a whole is very different then, too, and so... Yep. A lot of times, you know, what Funimation tries to do is we try to stay as relevant with consumer media as possible. So, you know, if that's how trends are starting to happen, and if it makes sense financially and technologically, then yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's something we'll, you know, consider and evaluate.
Okay, Invalid Name wants to know: do most or all of your shows remain available streaming after they go out of print, and for how long? I guess when something goes out of print, mm-hmm. I am under the impression that means your license has expired.
That's mm-hmm. not necessarily the case all okay. the time, I guess. I mean, basically, a show is going to remain on streaming service on Funimation.com for subscribers as long as we have those digital rights. I mean, dependent on how shows perform, it could be years after the last printing of a DVD or Blu-ray, or maybe, you know, depending on how the rights and the expiration dates, you know, it's going to be case by case. But just because something's out of print doesn't necessarily mean we don't have the license anymore either. I mean, there's been certain instances, I couldn't name any off the top of my head, but you never know, because each contract is very different on how they're worded and how timelines are created.
No two contracts are the same. They're like snowflakes.
Okay. Frank Fullmetal and a whole lot of people really want to know what's up with your Bandai Entertainment license rescues. Obviously, no specifics, but... Is this a 2015 thing? Is this a 2015 thing that we can look forward to?
We're working on some of those right now, so you could see some later this year. I'd say stay tuned, because, again, we're still finalizing, you know, the exactly what we can do and when we can do it. So yeah, no exact updates yet, but definitely there's possibilities in the air.
Well, okay, here's this question again. I guess it wouldn't be a Funimation podcast without this question. Big Anime wants to know, now that you're doing sub-only releases, Adam, do you want to tell me what title he's asking about?
Oh, Gaza Case Closed.
No, the other one.
Oh. What?
It's one we always ask about. Do you remember?
Hikai J.
Tatami Galaxy.
Tatami Galaxy! Oh, yes. We went down a totally different path.
Yeah. So that's what they're asking. Since you're doing sub only, have you considered Tatami Galaxy?
Not so far as I know right now.
Okay. Big on Anime also asked, you didn't pick up Fafnir Exodus. Is it safe to say that Fafnir didn't do that well for you?
I wouldn't say exactly how Fafnir didn't do as well for us based on that alone. I mean, it did fine enough as far as I'm aware, but we have no updates on Exodus.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasoning, or a lot of factors that go into play of picking up a new title and licensing. So, I mean, that while sales of previous or related titles is a factor, it's definitely not the only one.
The Miraxmers asks, thanks for the solid quality and the hybrid release of Good Luck Girl. How do you guys decide on the mix of special features and packaging for those releases?
Oh, well, great show, Good Luck Girl. Really funny. Glad you liked the release. Thank you very much. When it goes to extra features and packaging and all that stuff, it's dependent on a lot of different things. Materials from Japan is a very important one, because if we don't have assets to make something, then we can't make it at all. You know, budgets and the expectations of the brand or the show is very important as well. So, you know, when you do additional packaging, you know, features or extra features on disc, you know, there is more money that goes into that. And so depending on the expectations of how it's going to perform, that's a factor. And then also just our own imaginations. It's very important. Our brand management team and the rest of the team working on the title, you know, will have suggestions or ideas, and we'll put those through a business plan and see if it's, you know, possible. And if it is, then we'll do it.
All right. Thundersnapper wants to know what's up with the Serial Experiments Lane Blu-ray having banding issues. I'm pretty sure we've talked about this on a previous show, but he wants to know if it's possible for that to get fixed on a future release.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we – you made the question came up. I don't know if we had an answer, but something I did also talk to Clarine about a little bit. The original Japanese Blu-ray release and the materials we got had banding issues. This is even mentioned in the guidebook, including in our limited edition. There were some processes on our end that highlighted this a little bit more, unfortunately. We're always looking out for issues like this when they arise and try to fix them as best we can for future releases. There's no other plans yet for Lane in the future, but this stuff is something we always look for, issues like that.
All right. INS Division 6 wants to know if you're considering putting promotional codes for streaming services, kind of like the Crunchyroll. The Crunchyroll gift membership thing that they do where you get like 2 days free or whatever. So say you buy a Funimation disc, in there is 3 days worth of free streaming. Are you considering anything like that?
We've thought of ideas just like that before. That's definitely on the one that you could do list. Nothing tied down since we're going to do that yet, but it's definitely a possibility on the big bullet board of ideas.
All right. Trimble D asks, the Bebop Blu-rays don't let you select English audio and English subtitles at the same time. Is there a reason for that?
One that I'm aware of. I'm not 100% sure. I actually wasn't aware that happened until right now.
I don't have an answer for that one. I don't want to tell you something that's incorrect, so I have to look into that.
If you go to the menu and push up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right,
you'll get additional lives?
Exactly, yes.
I am not sure that that's true. I'm going to have to check my set and see if that...
Yeah, check it out. I can't confirm that.
Yeah, I didn't meta that on my release.
Yeah, normally you'd consider, you'd want descriptive audio, whatever. Anyway. Okay. A whole lot of people, and by a whole lot of people, I mean Mike Tool.
We love Mike.
One or two other guys really want to know what is going on with Yamato 2190. This is another long delayed release.
Yeah, I don't have an update.
Nothing.
Yeah, we don't have any updates on that one right now. Currently,
okay.
we still have it as far as I know.
Right. You just know no one cares, so you're just gonna leave it in the back and say right.
I'm sure there's a totally other reason. That's normally how it goes.
I'm sure there's some magical reason, licensing something, contracts. Let's just say there's something.
There's always one little thing that's like, this needs to be this thing, but at some point won't agree on some other point, and it's just everything's waiting on that one thing, and sometimes it's just a waiting game.
Or maybe there's no materials. Who knows?
That too, yeah. We're looking for this one thing called the movie, or the series.
We can't find it in the warehouse that
we left it on this shelf.
Okay, so in other words, you have no idea what's going on.
No idea.
Nope.
All right. QB the Third wants to know if you guys are going to be at OhioCon this year.
We will be at OhioCon this year. Actually, this year is the largest convention year we're going to have in regards to the amount of shows we're going to.
That's absolutely insanely true.
Yeah, we're going to 30-plus conventions this year. I'm going to die. Just put that out there, guys. Hey, look at that. Tara will be going. Tara, who's our conventions manager, will be going to OhioCon. Our new social media coordinator, Lauren, will also be out there supporting her at OhioCon. I'm not sure what events we have planned or anything like that, but we will be there. We just released recently our conventions list for the year. I think it was posted to our blog. So if you guys want to search that, Google it, I'm sure you'll see the list of other conventions, and we're still adding more on top of that.
Here's a quick question. I've always been curious about this, and don't answer if it's maybe a little too, personal. It's kind of weird. Your conventions manager, your convention staff, the guys that get stuck doing these, insane, brain-melting convention schedules, their time off, their regular time off during the week is structured differently, right? You don't make them work a 15-day work week.
Let me put it this way.
Oh, boy.
We don't make them work. whether they have enough time to do all of their job, that's another story.
Oh. Yeah, it's kind of the way, basically. If you can do the show and get all the stuff between the show done, you can totally take that day off when you get back.
Yeah, I've gone on some, 14-day, nonstop weeks of awesome anime fun.
Exactly. There was a few months there, let's call them July, that get a little hectic on travel and work and travel and work.
So I mean it's very day by day.
I will say on a serious note there, basically when we look at the schedules of how big they are and how many people we have. There's multiple people going to different ones, so there isn't as much of a burnout on any given person at any given time. The weight does fall a lot more on Tara's shoulders, but I also know she schedules certain things, you know, more people to help at certain larger cons, so it isn't, you know, basically her doing everything at the size of an Ohio con or an anime expo.
Right. Well, still, though, headline is labor exploitation at Funimation, right? I mean,
hey, I'm still here. I did it for 6 years. That counts for something, right?
Yeah. And then you got a nice desk job.
And some scotch at home.
Right. All right. User Ducknuts really wants to know if Funimation is the name of the company because you're in the business of fun animation. And he says he's been dying to know this. Please answer.
Can you say that again? Sorry.
Wait, yeah, go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
I'll start over again. User Ducknuts wants to know.
I just got stuck there. Sorry.
That's where I got stuck to.
If your company is called Funimation because you are in the business of fun animation. And he really wants to know the answer.
I believe that's where it actually started from. Going back to the Wayback Machine. What do you call it? I believe they basically said it's
fun. We have
fun.
A Wayback Machine?
It's called our 20th anniversary. Funimation.com/20th. But basically, I believe that's actually where the name originated was from along those lines. Basically, we put the fun in animation kind of thing. Because, again, when Funimation first started, it didn't there was no anime market. They didn't think they were getting into the anime market. They thought they were getting into the afternoon school kids TV market with Dragon Ball Z, which it was for a while. And they said, oh, look at this other stuff that's like what we do, but kind of different for an older audience. And that's where it started from. So I would say that's probably accurate.
Okay. J.R. Turby Phil wants to know if you're considering digital copies in combo pack releases.
That's also something that has been discussed. Whether or not it's happening or will happen, no news on that, but we have talked about it.
All right. Okay. I'm curious about this. Penguin Truth asks, why do the Bebop credits, the credits in the show, still credit the aliases of the actors? You know, these were their non-union mm-hmm. names that they mm-hmm. used back then. Those are still in the credits, but they're in the special features, obviously, under their real names. Why is that?
I don't know 100% why, but I'm thinking, this is just my assumption here, which means I'm going to make a, you know what that means. Anyway, so I actually was thinking about this literally yesterday also because I was going through some of that. And I'm assuming that we just didn't want to change the video files, like that we wanted to keep those as people, you know, have seen them
right.
and not redo those. And that's my assumption. Whereas when it came to some of the extras and stuff, we created new extras that are actually available on the DVD and Blu-ray releases. And we reunited the main cast to do this round table dinner and live read of the script of a scene. And so, I mean, when crediting that, we'd use what they're using nowadays, whereas those old episodes are what they used then. So I think I would just associate them to the timeline as to when they were created.
Which, on that note, so a secondary sideline to that note, I would love to hear, basically bring up the extras we created for Bebop, what fans thought of that who bought those extras. Because if anyone saw them, they're like a 90-minute extra interview, which actually had me a little, you know, choked up by the end of it. So to put those together with that kind of crew Bebop deserves it. It takes a lot of work. So I think it's anyone out there, tell us you liked it, you didn't like it, what you loved about it, what you didn't like about it. That kind of feedback will let us go do things like that more in the future.
Yeah, you can tweet us or you can post it on our Facebook page or any of those things.
Can I give you some feedback right now?
Please.
Sure.
It was really cool. It was great that it was on there. It would have been outstandingly cool if you'd have had the same feature as a double, if you could have had two of those, one with the people who actually made the show. That would have been great. Right. So
that would have been a lot harder.
It would have been a lot harder.
That is a cool idea.
But, you know, I know what Steve Blum thinks Cowboy Bebop is about. I would really like to hear it from the horse's mouth.
Understandable.
But it was a cool feature. That was really fun.
And it was actually, I would call it, it was also, maybe the story's been told a couple times. I don't remember if it was on the feature or not, but basically we filmed that when we got everyone together while we were down in, you know, near the time as Anime Expo in L.A., and the dinner plan actually just kind of came out after they actually did the interview. Said, we're doing this little thing. You want to film it? And it's like, yeah, that'd be awesome.
All right. Last two. Thundersnapper wants to know, where do your products get the most pre-orders from nowadays?
I don't know, honestly, between that, because I know obviously we do very, very well on pre-orders, because again, the audience is a very heavy pre-order audience online for sure, especially on our site and sites like, you know, Amazon and Right Stuff, of course. The audience is very trained, and they're also smart enough to know if I don't pre-order, I might not get one. So I don't exactly know where they are, but they are very, you know, still pre-orders are doing very well.
Yeah, I mean, with these, it's very skewed with the Funimation.com exclusives that we've been doing, so... those are definitely pre-order fodder. Those are things that you like should be pre-ordering. So, you know, that can, if you're talking about numbers overall, that's a very, you know, heavy skew, because that's the only place you get it, and you really need to get it before it sells out, which is before it even releases.
You'd want to change our logo to "you should be pre-ordering."
Yeah, really. Well, when it's something like that, yeah, sure. All right, so finally, Fist of the MFK wants to know whether or not you ever pursued or considered the Lupin the Third film. It's more of an OVA. It's only about an hour long, but it's a movie version of The Woman Called Fujiko Mine, which you released. It Discotheque licensed it, and you didn't. And a lot of people were asking, did you ever pursue it? Did you ever consider it? When Lance was on last time, he mentioned that was an underperformer. That show didn't do that well. So, is that a cause and effect?
It's possible. I don't have the 100% details on that. I would have to talk to our licensing team and specifically get, you know, their input. I don't know if Adam has any additional.
No. I remember us talking about Fujiko last time also, and yeah, pretty much the same thing. I really don't know where exactly the details on that.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know the details on that is a great place to end.
We'll just call that the strong point. I don't know the details on that.
Yeah.
The drinking game. Every time someone says something like that, drink some orange juice.
Exactly. Okay. Well, that wraps us up. Thank you for putting yourselves under the interrogation lamp once again. Really appreciate it. And Justin, have a fantastic time out there in Vegas.
Thank you.
Again, we'll love being on.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Justin and Adam for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We would appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.